Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're joined by Scott Kite, the CEO of Corsell PLC. It's good to be talking to you again, Scott. How are you?
Great to be here. Doing well, thank you.
And Kenny, of course, how are you doing? Is it sunny in Scotland like it is over in The Hague? Actually, Scott, I should ask you first, what's it like with you?
Here in London? Yes. It's actually gorgeous. It's, I think, 19 degrees and the sun is out.
You've got the same as me then. So does indeed. Kenny meet us or is it dreary Scotland?
No, to be honest, we've had probably 6 or 7 glorious days. Today it's slightly overcast, but there's still bits of blue. I'd say it's maybe 11 or 12, but it's still shorts weather, t-shirt weather for us. So it's tropical, so it is.
Good.
But no, it's great to have you back on, Scott. I'm trying to think when the last spoke. Was it tail end of last year? Or was it
I think so, yeah, in this format. Yeah. I think it would have been late last year.
Yeah, and obviously quite a lot has happened in the world since then. Obviously, the situation in Ukraine, it's just terrible at the moment. And there's all sorts of impacts and commodities and prices and, everyday life is just affected now by what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And obviously the nickel price has had one crazy day where it went up 100%. In all reality, you would never, ever, ever dream of that happening. It's just crazy.
Yeah, the world has kind of come unhinged, as you say. Mm. I mean, I've got a bit of a background in Russia, Eastern European studies, and so I've been watching this all very closely. But as far as the metals markets, the nickel market appears to be broken, or at the very least, not functioning as it's supposed to.
Do you think it was all stemming from the troubles?
I think so. I mean, my understanding is there was a massive short position in China that a big manufacturer user of nickel had on, and that sort of had to be unwound like in 24 hours, and it set nickel to all time highs. I mean, absolutely crazy. I mean, I checked right before we jumped on here, and it looks like it's another 15% up today, and up 53% for the month. So yeah. To 36, 37 grand, something like that. Down from its all-time high a week ago. But as I said, the markets aren't working at the moment. So it seems to be running into its kind of automated bump stops every time the market opens here in London.
Yeah. So it was a short squeeze in action, wasn't it?
I think this was the ultimate short
squeeze.
Yeah. I mean, to set prices that nobody believed were possible just a few weeks ago. I mean, insane. 36, 37,000. I mean, at today. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
And for the LME to suspend, that's unprecedented. I was emailing the LME and it was completely unprecedented to do that. They didn't elaborate on why, but I think you're perhaps correct in your assumption. That's what I read as well from other sources about this short position.
I was just going to jump in. I believe that they're supposed to get a lot of lawsuits, in the next couple of months. Because if you think about it, I mean, it's really kind of unfair that this has been, in a sense, it's good for the market to be unwound this way in a reasonable way, but it's also unfair to some of the investors that should have benefited from it.
Exactly. Well, what's the film, The Big Short? And he doesn't get what he should get, doesn't he, at the end of it? Because it's just, at the end of the day, he was like a lone person and the money just wasn't there at the end of the day. I mean, he did well, but... When you take these kind of big bets, the where everyone thinks it's not going to happen, and there's a huge short squeeze, then sometimes it's just not the money there to actually satisfy the other trade, I suppose. But you're right, completely unfair.
There are a bunch of hedge funds that should have been settled, in the high double digits, right? I mean, 70, 80, 90,000, and they were kind of pushed back down to what are still high. Good numbers, but I guess their sort of real whopper trades might have been cut off there a bit, and no doubt there's going to be some lawyers mobilized to let that
I'm sure they will. I mean, the LME told me that it was we did this to ensure an orderly market. That's what they said, to ensure an orderly market. But I mean, supply and demand, that sounds orderly to me.
Yeah, it feels like what they've done is delayed what might have actually worked itself out in a day or two with a lot of losses. And instead, they're spreading it. They're spreading the volatility over a period of weeks. Mm. And it runs up against its stops every day. And I think who would really want to be in this market where it's kind of just unwinding of a few of these big trades? I mean, it really discourages, I think, general participants.
Yeah. So do you got one, Kenny?
Yeah, I'm just going to say, so what are the long-term implications of this spike and slight retrace? Because nobody knows what could happen in the next few weeks. You know, anything could escalate or de-escalate, as the case may be. And, you know, it's very volatile.
My take is it really depends on what happens with Russia. I mean, there's some concerns there around security of supply, obviously. I mean, everybody knows Norilsk, right? The big factory town in the north that supplies a lot of the world's nickel. If that really were to go offline or otherwise people just choose not to buy it, then it really does fundamentally change nickel pricing and nickel supply going forward. At a time when, you know, certainly we at Corcel expected nickel to go up anyway, you know, over the next couple of years. And we saw that really more around, you know, EVs and nickel going into batteries, things like that. Nobody obviously anticipated a war in Ukraine and a big chunk of really valuable, no risk supply potentially going offline or potentially having sort of users of nickel say, well, we don't want to buy from Russia any longer. You know, the LME is talking about bans on Russian metals of different kinds. I mean, that could lead to, you know, exceptional shortages over the midterm and prices, you know.
Palladium's another one that's sort of crazy on as well. You know, there's a lot of supply comes from Russia.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So I think that the view there is to take a bet, you know, whether that's going to persist. The world seems more organized against Russia than it has been, you know, certainly than I can remember, probably dating back to Soviet days, really. And it really does seem like a lot of brands and different businesses are choosing not to interact with Russia in any meaningful way. Obviously, oil and gas is not the easiest thing to come off of, but nickel and other things may alter, you know, may have alternate sources of supply. So our take is that we see nickel users, you know, very concerned and scrambling to try to find alternate mid to long term sources of supply that they can depend on, probably outside of kind of Russia's sphere of influence, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like a perfect storm. You know, you had a perfect storm brewing with the EV race and, you know, green tech and, you know, net zero 50 and the way forward. And now you've almost got a perfect storm on top of it, you know, with what's going on in the East. So yeah, it was really interesting to see how it unfolds. And the bizarre thing is none of this is filtered down to any of the juniors yet. You know, the sky high commodity prices, you know, record highs. And for want of a better term, the junior market, it's on its backside.
Yeah.
So it is.
No, it's weird. I agree completely. I don't know why we're not seeing retail and other kind of smaller investors sort of point out that some of these deposits, I mean, let's look at the two we have, the Mumbari deposit and the Wowo Cap deposit out in PNG. They're large, you know, they're world-class. They're not that far away from production, ultimately, getting their licensing in order. These things have been valued at kind of zero for a long time on our balance sheet. I mean, give or take, we can debate that. And we're not yet anyway, we're not kind of seeing the recognition that these things go from, you know, whatever you wanted to value at them historically to probably a heck of a lot more valuable and more likely to be put into production.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's go back to, you know, you mentioned Mumbari and Wowo Gap there. I mean, there's been quite a few sort of news releases in the last couple of months, you know, just with various different parts of the project have been advanced, and there's I'm just having a look just now. There's a farm out process as well, potentially. Can you maybe just run through the sort of two or three major RNSs for the nickel projects and what the implications are?
Of course. I mean, Mumbari is waiting its final big metric, which is the mining lease. We've been working on this for a couple of years now. You know, I think I've said on this podcast and other formats, we know PNG is not the fastest, you know, government organization in the world, but it really does seem like it's quite close now. Could be week to week, month to month kind of thing. They've sent it to what they call the NEC, which is a sort of political council that has to sign off on it. The sort of technical people appear to have done that. And with that hopefully done at some point here in the near term, then that project has probably its biggest value inflection event in history, certainly the biggest one since 2012 when the Torque was released. So that's pretty close. Not much we can do, but wait, really, we're sort of doing work in the background to prep with the assumption that that will go forward here in the midterm. And then Whoa, Whoa, Gap is the one that we kind of quietly, like I said, under the radar, picked up, over the last year and a half. Again, I don't think we got much credit for it, but we paid very, very little for it. And, we've taken it over late last year. I'm trying to move that forward here. The first bit we're doing is upgrading the Jork. We need to take it from a Jork 2004 to 2012 standard. And as part of that, we're hoping to upgrade some of the resource to some of it going to measured. I mean, obviously we don't know that yet, but that's kind of our goal there. And yeah, the other day we announced that we've raised a bit of money and we're going to try to further compress that timescale because we're getting pressure from, counterparties, some of the potential off-takers to go ahead and get the second project up to the point where Mombare is. And so that really means doing a BFS, bankable feasibility study, and then getting that mining lease application in using all of the lessons learned on Mombare over the last couple of years, because they really are fairly identical in that sense. So a lot of what we did at Mombare can be duplicated. I mean, it won't be exactly the same, of course, and otherwise taken forward. Again, we expected this to happen. We didn't expect it to happen this early in 2022, but this is sort of what juniors can do, right? I mean, we can be hyper flexible. We can seize this opportunity when it sits there in front of us, and that's kind of ultimately what we've done.
Yep. Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder there, Scott. I was just going to bring up about the offtake discussions, and I know that I think there's meant to be a meeting probably around about now in China to further discussions in this offtake agreement.
That's right, and this is one of these things where COVID has delayed things. I mean, if you look at the COVID restrictions in Australia, which is where our primary partner is, and the actual plant itself, which is in China, so he's Chinese but he's based in Sydney. He hasn't been able to go home, right? I mean, it's been a real issue, actually, in getting out and sitting around the counterparties of the NPC plant and getting kind of buy-in for our offtake and any potential transaction between us. So this is a situation where he now believes he can get out there. I mean, anybody who's done business in that part of the world knows that a lot of that is face-to-face. Often it's done over alcohol, things like that, right? I mean, you Zoom doesn't necessarily work for all these kinds of things. There's a major Korean entity involved who's listed, as well as the plant itself and the fund, as I said, and our counterparty there is in Sydney. So these people need to get together, and that looks like it's supposed to happen here. Yeah, end of the month. So this week, next week, and we're hoping to get, obviously have some feedback on that early next month. What they're focused on clearly is looking at Mombare and Whoa, Whoa, Gap, and looking at what the precursor plants really would need. Because again, the NPC plants, the people we're dealing with, they need a more finished product than we can provide, because we're not going to put that plant up in Mombare or Whoa, Whoa for the time being. We would export it to an intermediary, and that intermediary would send it on to NPC to the actual cathode plant.
Yep.
So we're just about really getting that spec right and kind of, getting everybody on the same page. And, we've hinted about potentially some partnerships with developing the assets. But I can tell you, if I was a user of nickel, with a cathode plant, and I saw, a big chunk of world supply cut off or prices quadrupling, going bonkers, I would certainly be pretty interested in securing supply, right? So that's the kind of logic here. I mean, what we were trying to do late last year exists, but now it's times 10. I mean, the need, yeah. Right? So pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think it might be quite good, Scott, just to take a step back, maybe for somebody that is not aware of the company, just to explain about the two projects. Obviously there's synergies between both of them, and maybe just give an idea of the scale of resource that is available at these projects.
Yeah, these are two nickel laterite projects in PNG. One is, I think, 162 million tons, and the other one is 125. So you end up with sort of contained nickel of 1.5 and 1.3 million tons. So, I mean, they're big. They're very big. They're relatively lower grade than something like Norilsk, I mean, which is why they haven't been brought into production to date. But the plan here is to put a DSO operation in place to really just dig it out of the ground, dry it out, and ship it off to these precursor plants that I mentioned earlier in China. Total CapEx on a project like that would be sort of 30, 35 million. So nothing too crazy. We don't need to go raise $1 billion and put a complicated nickel plant up. So our view is that these have been sort of a little bit neglected, and that the change of nickel supply demand was going to unlock that. And so we placed this bet. I mean, we picked up Whoa, like I said, under the radar, kind of almost for nothing. Nobody paid much attention, but now it looks like that bet's coming good, possibly years beforehand. And so really it's about sort of doubling down, really just accelerating this part of the business that has been, we considered material, but maybe a little, a little unsexy for retail in that sense, right? I mean, we're not throwing off constant Jork upgrades and things, because these are huge. These are huge resources, and there was no point to go drill more. Yeah. So, you know, we're in a sense, these are at the sort of quote unquote boring stage, but they're also at the stage where they go from theoretical to real in that sense, right? Once you put them
on. The economics is so much better, isn't it? With that nickel price, you know, rocketing.
30, let's take today, 37 grand. I mean, these projects were costed on, they really work above 15, but let's say we costed them about 18,000. And, you know, we've been at 100,000 the other day, or let's call it 37,000, 36,000 today. No, the economics are phenomenal.
And obviously, I mean, they're both elephant scale, but Mimbari in particular, I think these have only drilled like 3% of the plateau. From memory. I know a lot of this project because
that was a convenience point. I mean, basically you drill the sides mostly. It's a little easier to get to. And then they drilled out a part of the plateau some years ago. So scale will never be a problem, I don't think, for either one of these projects. You got to think of these a little bit more like an aggregate, right? It's a little bit more of a mass, you know, a mass product, somewhat lower grade. They're not going to be, as attractive on paper as, like I said, Norilsk. And the reason Norilsk is so attractive is because it's a sulfide and has a lot of byproduct credits, right? So you end up mining a lot of things, not just nickel, at Norilsk that you can sell. And it kind of makes the economics very attractive. This is a bit simpler, but again, with nickel, you know, nickel in demand now for, you know, as we know, stainless and other things, as well as EVs, you know, we only see that growing over the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
Obviously, there's the cobalt credit projects.
Yeah, cobalt would be our byproduct credit. That's correct. Yeah. So that's the thing that we sell. And that's obviously a big part of the battery supply chain as well. I mean, being so important to keeping lithium ion batteries from, frankly, melting, right? So it's a big deal. It's really only found in DRC and as a byproduct for things like this, like nickel and in a few other places. Very, very hard to find cobalt in any quantities. So, you know, cobalt users will appreciate any and all cobalt that can be put onto the market. And we will no doubt find happy homes for, you know, for the cobalt mined alongside the nickel here.
Yep. Sorry, Mark, I'll let you jump in. I know I've been talking for the last 10 minutes.
That's okay. Do you think Scott Corso looked to add any other projects in the battery metals supply?
We've been looking at that. I mean, if you look at what we're missing, right, lithium would be the obvious one. And it's something we're definitely open to. I mean, another nickel project, probably a nickel sulfide, you know, maybe a little earlier stage where you got to do some exploration. That could be something I could see us looking at. The issue is, you know, what we got for nothing because it was a bit out of favor. It's not super clear to me that we can pick up battery metal projects of any quality or, you know, advanced ones anyway, at this point for a reasonable price, right? You know, if again, we get the share price motoring as we hope, you know, you become a bit bigger company, maybe you take some of those bigger punts, but you know, it's a balance, of course, right, of diluting current shareholders, which we obviously don't want to do, versus trying to add other projects like that. So I tend to think cheaper earlier stage stuff fits for the moment. I mean, never say never, right, if the right thing comes in, but it is a hot space. And I think we are seeing the transition from battery metals as a future sort of area of interest to something that's happening you know, day to day.
There's manganese as well, isn't there?
Yeah, manganese fits into that. But again, that's sort of such a different animal with regards to how you might, you know, it's a huge, you know, you end up with huge resources. I mean, a lot of them, you know, in places like South Africa, it's a very sort of different type of a business, I would say. But yeah, but never say never. I think lithium would be the one I would probably choose. A nickel sulfide target or some leases where you could go and drill out some nickel sulfide targets would probably be pretty exciting to us. Yeah. And then don't forget, we do have the vanadium asset still in Canada, which we are, you know, continuing to work on. Plans at the moment really there to do a bit of a review and try to figure out the best way to take that forward. We have some minority partners there as well, you know, and obviously, you know, I can't say anything too specific there, but I think there's probably a deal to be done at some point if we want to go ahead and take 100% of that. So yeah, I mean, you know, we're pretty happy with what we have. I think, like I said, if there's one criticism of what we've been doing, it's that it's in that sort of permitting stage and doesn't sort of throw off a lot of super active news flow that some, you know, obviously some retail people really like to see, the kind of weekly RNSs. But I do think you will see us accelerate this, as we've said, especially WoWo, which is the one we control a bit more. And it does look to be pretty busy. I mean, the BFS and the mining lease application, as well as the torque upgrade, are all going to keep us pretty busy over the coming months. And the idea there is really just to use this extra money to parallel process on some of these things instead of doing them sequentially, which obviously takes a little bit longer.
And do you look at some point, just considering the nickel price too, I don't know, is there a value attributed at the minute to WoWo? Would you look to update that or Not quite yet.
We could. I mean, when we bought the project, there were some valuations by external parties, but I would argue at the moment, very difficult to value, right? With the price bumping around like it does. I mean, who knows what that's worth, but all to our benefit. I mean, if it's only gone up, let's put it that way. I mean, as a point of reference, both these projects, let's call it Mambara and Wowo, we believe have had about £7-8 million spent on it. So that's your cost basis. So that's kind of a bit of a floor, I would say. And where it goes from there is really, I think, getting the mining lease in place, getting some of these other things in order, looking at the economics, deciding on what price we're going to use going forward. Because again, it may not be 18,000 anymore. It might be 26. And those economics are going to look pretty good. I mean, pretty good, which is why we need to move fast and get this done, or get Wowo upgraded as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'm just talking of moving fast, and you probably touched on some of it as well, but it'd probably be good to hear again. I mean, what's the rest of 2022 looking like for these two projects? You know, what's the key?
Yeah, so key points would be mining lease at Mambare, like I said, any day. And I that's not because I think it's tomorrow or not tomorrow. It's because we just don't control it. We don't know. But that's a pretty big deal. That's clearly a value inflection event. Jork upgrade, that's probably April, not far at all, a month or so away. Beyond that, the BFS, like I said, we're trying to bring that forward. So that's being scoped at the moment via gap analysis type work, which then, leads directly to the BFS, which we anticipate takes probably a couple of months. And then you get on and apply for the mining lease, which, we could see how far we can accelerate that. But my guess is that's next year, early next year, realistically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got a nice series of events there. The wild card in all this, I think one of you might've mentioned, is that we have hired actually an investment bank out of North America approached us, and we hired them to go ahead and market the Wowo Gap project. And a typical deal for them is really to bring in a minority of high net worths. They usually take, 20 to 40%, something like that. Company would remain operator most likely. And, these guys are pretty impressive. I mean, I can't mention them by name because they've asked not to be so far, but we did a lot of diligence on them out of North America, checking out some other groups and some of the deals that they've done historically. And, they're one of the groups that can deliver capital into the project, which, you don't see that often. You hear a lot of people talk about it, but it's not all that common. And so again, I think with nickel going crazy, it's just a no-brainer to try to do that. So bringing in a big slug of money up front, would allow us to take Wowo Gap to mining lease and then potentially into production on the back of, of that relationship. These guys like to do, multiple financings. They're a bit of an old fashioned, fairly kind of traditional group in that space. A lot of, they do exclusively mining, and, we're pretty excited to see how they can potentially hook us up with, I would say, pools of capital is probably a little bit on tap for us. So that's the other bit of news, I would say. We put that out the other day, and that process has begun. And obviously, we'll update the market as soon as we have something firm there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just picking up what you said there, so we assume that, any debt will be at project level. There'll be no dilution to shareholders going forward with regards to some of the activities you talked about.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Certainly, we would not fund the project at the PLC level. These would all be project funded, much like our projects on the flexible grid solution side. So the idea, of course, is to have the topco be kind of light and be able to take fees and collect winnings from all these different deals as they progress at different speeds. We'll always try to protect the equity side. We don't see anything that I've talked about here requiring dilution or significant dilution at the PLC level. Certainly this bank, their mandate has been to take this into the project. They specifically approached us, like I said, with that plan in place. And that's where we sit at the moment.
Yep. And obviously there's an offtake or a potential offtake partner in the background as well. And I mean, I've seen deal structure in the past as well, where the offtake guys, take on some of the risk as well. So I'm assuming that'll be something you'll probably be talking about as well.
Indeed. Like I said, I think they need to sit down. We need to work out the spec and make sure that that's something we can deliver. I mean, that's part of what that DD is that we've announced. And then I could see them moving pretty aggressively there. I mean, any of us certainly would if we were in their shoes. They had this opportunity to some extent comes from COVID. It comes from some supply chain issues they had and getting access to these kind of raw materials during COVID. That's now just gone 10x worse, frankly. So it makes a lot of sense for them to work very closely with us to make very clear what they need, where it's going to be sent, and to facilitate these projects going from, as I said, exploration licenses today to mining leases and ultimately into production. Yeah. And I think for groups of this size, and again, I encourage people who haven't looked it up to look at the investors, including the big Korean company Cosmo, behind these behind NPC and Sentinel, the big mining fund. I mean, these are serious industry players. And for them, honestly, the kind of checks we're talking about in PNG are not that big. You know, if you're going to get guaranteed offtake for a certain amount of years.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, so I'm not going to. Well, I suppose it is. COVID was a black swan event, so it was, and you could potentially say that Russia Ukraine is a black swan event as well. And usually, what happens after these events is there's a lot of mergers and there's a lot of acquisitions and survival of the fittest, etc. So. And it's usually it's whoever makes the first move, and then it's quickly followed by all the other majors snaffling up anything that's available. So, Yeah, the rest of 2022 is going to be extremely interesting to see how not just the nickel market pans out, but obviously gold, palladium, platinum, all the stuff that the comes from Russia
and Ukraine for that matter.
Yeah,
all Ukrainian production is offline.
Yeah, well. I think from memory,
wheat, I believe, is supposed to be a huge issue. I mean, Ukraine was always the breadbasket of the Soviet Union and famous for that. And that's all offline. We're going to have ramifications and
fertilizer as well.
Fertilizer, that's right. Potash is exactly right. Mm-hmm. Is that they're a big producer of all these things. So it's like throwing the stone in the pond, right? You see the initial splash, and then the ripples are going to go out here, I think, for months and months.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. What you say though about the security of supply, Scott, as well. We've been sort of saying this for a while, haven't we? And the market might just be cottoning on. I remember a round table I did with some guys in the battery metal space, and. The consensus was that the market has absolutely no idea how short the industrial market is on these raw commodities. And I think I have a tweet up just now. Elon Musk put out only a couple of days ago. Musk sees challenge with battery production next year. Says batteries will be a limiting factor. Mm-hmm. And do you think that short we talked about with the nickel? Do you think that is an early warning sign of what's to come? Do you think finally the sort of commodities mining space will see its day, maybe driven by commodities for battery metals?
Yeah, no, I do. I think that has brought, I mean, like I said earlier, when we put Corcell together in its new form a couple of years ago, we placed two bets, one a little bit shorter term on some of the flexible grid stuff, and this longer term bet on battery metals more broadly, and nickel and cobalt in particular. And as I said, it hasn't gotten a lot of love for some reason. I mean, we were snapping things up cheaply and people didn't seem to care, but it certainly looks to me like that day has come a lot sooner than we all expected. I mean, and like I said, our goal here is to take advantage of it. So I'd like to see that, as we kind of said earlier, filter down. Obviously, it probably starts with the bigger companies first, the ones in production, and then down to assets like ours that are nearing being able to be put into production. We'd like to see that re-rating. But you're right. I mean, all you have to do is listen to a battery metals panel. And people warn. They warn because the industry doesn't understand. I mean, they don't understand how long it takes to put things into production. To go from nothing to a mine, can take 8 to 10 years. So in our case, we have resources where a lot of that work has already been done, and they can be put in production relatively quickly, especially on a DSO basis. But it's not like the nickel, nickel suppliers around the world can all double production overnight. It's not like that. It's a little bit more, complicated than some of the oil and gas people that maybe they can pump a little bit more. Maybe you can push Saudi Arabia to sort of make up for some of this. Maybe you'll see US shale, make up on the gas side of things, right? I mean, by increasing production. But it's funny, you read that on the shale side and on the mining side that, there's been a lot of sort of capital burned in these areas historically. And I think the shale producers and some of the mining companies, the big producers, have been pushed by investors not to overinvest, right? But what does that mean? That just means when it does bounce, it's going to be worse, which is kind of, I think, what you're saying here, right? I mean, when the supply crunch comes and it looks like it has started, that means the spikes are going to be even worse than they would have been had there been more measured, increases in investments in production along the way.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. Good. Well, hopefully it does transpire, and all the people investing in mining and exploration will be. Very happy for the next decade when it kicks. Kenny, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, it just sounds like, obviously Corcell, there's quite a lot of news flow coming from the Mambari and Boo Gap project. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, you've got the offtake agreement, and you mentioned Scott, my mind's a sieve today. What was it, the other near-term activity?
Oh, well, the investment bank, we've got the JORC upgrade at Willow Gap.
Yeah, absolutely. JORC upgrade.
Yeah, so that's basically taken the 2004 standard, updating it to 2012. And I think, as I mentioned, we do hope to actually improve some of the categories as part of that. I mean, sometimes when you do those dark upgrades, it's kind of a tabletop study. And really what the 2012 standard looks at is the economics. So in the old standard, you probably get away with getting a bit bigger resource that maybe was some of which wasn't economic, right? So in this case, what we're doing is what the 2012 standard really dictates is that you look really hard at the economics. And so actually, in this case, the guys working on it at the moment are pretty bullish. They think that that this could actually work out in our favor, and WoWO Cap will look a little bit better when it comes out and have a standard resource.
Is that something like SRK that's doing that for you, Scott?
We've got a guy named Larry Queen who worked for Highland Pacific down there in PNG. So you know, he's like one of the experts on nickel laterites. So he's doing the work for us. We've used CSA at Lombare historically. And when we do the BFS, I suspect we are going to go to an external group. But at the moment, we've got effectively the industry expert, you know, one of the biggest sort of, if you look at the guy's CV, it's just nickel laterites basically, which is outstanding for us. It's a small team out there. We've got most of these guys are in Australia, but they've done a good job getting their hands around it so far. We actually just sent the first resupply flight out to the camp since we took over last year. Mm-hmm. That was successful. The project's really, you know, I think we've got our hands around it now, and we're driving it forward as aggressively as we can and in light of these these conditions.
Yeah. Are you hoping to go out yourself this year, Scott, site visit?
Yeah, we were talking about that just the other day, funny enough. Basically, the guidance there is kind of autumn our time, which is when it's not as rainy. I think PNG is kind of a rainy season almost all year long. But there are times when if you go out there, you could easily get stuck for a couple of weeks. And obviously, nobody wants that. So COVID allowing, we have broad plans to go sort of, late summer into early autumn out there, which would be great. And and kind of see where things sit.
Excellent. Mark, have you anything to finish off with?
No, I'm all good. I'm quite glad we had this chat, Scott. That was a nice little update of Corcel and a discussion on what might be to come in the battery metals market. So I'm all good. Hopefully we catch up again in not too distant future and see where things are, see what that nickel price is doing.
Excellent. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Cheers, Scott. Yep.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Per, Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.